Penguin Random House Audio presents Going Off Script, How I Survived a Crazy Childhood, Cancer, and Clooney's 32 On-Screen Rejections. Written and read by Juliana Rancic.
Acknowledgements. To those who give me life, Anna and Eduardo, Bill and Duke. Chapter 1. I was born a celebrity. It was the summer of 1974, a Saturday morning in Naples, Italy, where my father, Eduardo De Pandi, was a master tailor, and my mother, Anna, was a housewife. My brother, Pasquale, was 7 years old and already anointed king of the world, much to the outrage of my five-year-old sister, Monica. I was 2 weeks overdue, but my mother kept that to herself, determined as she was to just go about her business until I decided to make my entrance, whenever that happened to be. What's an extra 3 or 4 months in the womb, right? Mama De Pandi was never one to complain. Even when she was swollen like an Oompa Loompa and stuck in our cramped third-floor walk-up apartment with no air conditioning in the torpid August heat. On Italy's southern coast, summer weekends are always hot and unhurried, generation after generation following the same rhythm and the same rituals. Come Saturday morning, the men and children traditionally head to the beach, while the women stay behind to fix a huge picnic feast, which they then lug down to the shore, appearing en masse like an advancing army at lunchtime. When my mother's water broke on the beach the morning of my birth, I'm told that she just kept serving her famous frittata. Then, without a word, she suddenly got up and discreetly walked into the sea, hoping to swim off the labor pains. No one had ever seen Anna De Pandi go into the water during lunch before. My father hurried in after her. "Anna, what's going on?" Babbo called out. "Nothing, nothing," she insisted, as if she were suddenly an Olympic medalist preparing to do a few warm-up miles before casually swimming across the sea to Tunisia. "Are you in labor?" my father demanded. "No," she insisted, turning back to the beach and not bothering to mention the contractions. "Let's eat." Italians invented comfort food, and our thinking is that there's nothing a few hundred carbs can't cure. Mama kept up the pretense that nothing was wrong, as long as she could, but I was hell-bent on joining the party, and the picnic came to a screeching halt as her contractions worsened. I was very nearly born in traffic on the way to the clinic, where a midwife waited to deliver me, contrary to my sister's account of highly skilled dolphins doing so at sea, a story I fervently believed until I was something like 12. Maybe the dolphins would have been less shocked than the humans by my size, 13 pounds. If I hadn't been her third baby, my poor mother may not have survived, considering that she didn't have the luxury of an epidural and got nothing more than the equivalent of a single Advil to kill the pain. Not only was I huge, but I came out with a full head of dark hair, too. I basically arrived as a toddler. I was named after my mother and her older brother, my Uncle Giulio. As a child, I took the lack of a middle name as an open invitation to find my own. I gravitated towards stripper names. Roxy was a recurring favorite. At birth, though, everyone just called me Pacchiana, which loosely translated to large peasant woman with a red moon face. Neighbors lined up out the door waiting their turn to come see the giant baby when my parents brought me home, and my mother proudly passed me around for closer inspection. It's hard to picture this scene now in a purellified world where we don't even dare touch a shopping cart at a grocery store without sanitizing it first, but Mama's approach to building up her newborn's immune system was more along the lines of, "Oh, sure, a holder, a sneeze on her, set her on the floor if your arms get tired." But no one ever did. I was the neighborhood star, and it seemed like no one would ever get enough of me and my chubby cheeks. Sadly, that initial wave of public interest and adoration lasted for only 18 months. By then, the only part of me still freakishly large were my feet, which were crammed into big black orthopedic shoes. Pictures of me back then show this poor, sweet little girl sitting there with her dainty pierced earrings and frou-frou dress, with her face nearly obscured by the black clodhoppers sticking out in front of her like skis. It's not like I was expecting red-soled baby Louboutins, but seriously. Not long ago, I came across one of my old baby photos. I kicked into fashion police mode and interrogated my mother about this footwear horror, demanding some answers. Were they trying to hide evidence that they were secretly binding my feet in hopes I wouldn't grow into the size 10 I became before I even hit puberty? Did Mama have some torrid fling with a clown when the circus came through town and I was their secret love child? Mama waved off my indignation, trying to pretend there was nothing unusual about dressing an infant in old man Oxfords. I still don't buy it, but clearly I was traumatized by it. Trying to overcompensate for my large baby hooves no doubt drove me to become the shoe whore I am today. My fickle local fan base reappeared once my full head of dark baby hair turned into golden corn silk. I was once again a huge hit. A blonde kid in southern Italy is very rare, like traffic-stopping rare. Vespas are pretty much the only thing with a motor that can navigate the narrow streets of old Naples. And boys and young men would roar around, piled three to a scooter. Sometimes they would stop to gape at me in my golden hair while I was on the stoop playing with my doll. And my maternal grandfather, Antonio, would come charging out. "You get away from her! Don't even look at her!" I was the apple of Nonno's eye. He adored me, and the feeling was mutual. My very first memory is of standing next to him while he's talking to people about how pretty I am, how special, that I am his angel. My grandfather was also my first fashion icon. He was really tall and elegant and wore a top hat. He just put himself together so beautifully and carried himself with such pride, even though he was a simple man who worked at a train station food cart. Nonno was my first heartbreak, too. He died suddenly at the age of 75. I was 9 years old when I kissed him goodbye forever. My grandfather was a great man, and I think my mother saw a lot of him in my dad. My father has many of the same qualities, including the sweet temperament that can flare in an instant, turning him into a raging Italian bull. Different variations of the Vespa boys would discover that years later. Stay tuned for a very special episode of Juliana Hits Puberty. Dad was the oldest of five children born into a struggling family in post-war Italy. His parents would have to hide the bread and ration it out so their hungry kids wouldn't climb up on the counter and gobble it up. Young Eduardo loved school, but was forced to find a job at 10 so he could help support the family. He was put to work in a tailor shop, where he picked up scraps and cleaned. When he didn't return to class, one of his teachers showed up to confront his father, Pasquale. Eduardo was a really bright boy and a very good student, the teacher explained. He had potential, and his parents were making a big mistake not to give him the education he deserved. "Are you going to help pay the bills?" Pasquale asked the teacher before telling him to mind his own business, and Eduardo started working in the fourth grade. My father is still one of the smartest men I've ever known, and his ability to focus so keenly on any challenge before him made him a master tailor at a young age. He had his own shop while still in his 20s, and his exquisite custom work would eventually make him sought after within the powerful circles of Washington, D.C.'s elite. He and my mother, a pretty brunette at the time, with brown eyes and great curves, met when Anna was just 15 and Eduardo was 20. Once they fell in love, it was forever. They're in their 70s now, married 50 years, and they still dance together and laugh at their private jokes and don't like to go anywhere without each other. I want my marriage to always be like theirs. It's funny, but when people ask me to describe Naples, one of the first images that always pops into my head is of old marble steps riddled with chips and cracks, a fairly common sight in a city tested by the wrath of both man and nature. Maybe the steps got seared into my memory because children just naturally explore the ground beneath them more than adults. The streets were where we played, and the stoops were our vantage point for any neighborhood drama. As a little girl, I couldn't possibly have grasped what those ruined steps were telling the world. But as a grown woman, I would one day cling to their truth, understanding that Naples was beautiful, not despite her scars, but because of them. There was a coziness to my Italian childhood that I wish Bill and I could replicate for our son Duke. Everything revolved around the two things Italians treasure most: food and family. What I would give now for those lazy weekend lunches on the beach like the one on the day I was born. As a child, I would watch hungrily as the women unpacked a feast from their baskets and totes. Out would come fresh baguettes and hunks of cheese, fresh tomatoes, bottles of wine, and liters of Coke. And of course, heaping platters of antipasti, slices of fatty salami, small mountains of shaved...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?